From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, Editor-in-Chief of ACC.org, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. I'm recording this podcast on Monday, May the 4th. I've chosen three articles that were published this week related to the COVID-19 pandemic. I think each of them provides some important insights as we think about our practices and those of our colleagues. I'll talk very briefly about a randomized trial that was published in The Lancet and reflect a little bit on a recent report from the NIH about a U.S. trial. We'll talk about cath lab considerations in the COVID pandemic and then some considerations for patients, healthcare workers, and health systems as well, both published in JACC. So the first article was published this past week in Lancet, and it's a randomized trial looking at patients who had been hospitalized with COVID-19 in China. A double-blind, placebo-controlled trial in 10 hospitals. Patients had to be adults with symptoms less than 10 days old. They had to have a low oxygen saturation. They were hospitalized. And they were randomized in a 2-to-1 fashion to either get remdesivir or placebo for 10 days. And the endpoint was clinical improvement at 28 days, which had various aspects to it, whether it was charged, whether on oxygen, et cetera. There were 158 patients who were randomized to remdesivir, 79 to placebo, and the median age was 65. About 2/3 were men. Hypertension was present in 43%, diabetes in 23%. The number of patients requiring invasive ventilation was roughly 10%. They studied viral load, and this did not change between the treatment groups. Also, the time to clinical improvement was similar, 21 days for remdesivir versus 23 days for placebo. No change in mortality at 28 days, both around 14%. And so they concluded in this small trial that was underpowered that remdesivir did not appear to have a substantial effect on time to recovery or mortality. Interesting, the original target population was twice as many patients, or nearly 500, and they ended up with a much smaller number because the outbreak had cooled down in China by the time the trial got initiated. Ironically, the NIH, just within a day of this publication, reported a 1,000-patient study suggesting that remdesivir had a significant impact in reducing hospital length of stay from 15 to 11 days, and there was a trend for mortality. And this has led to an emergent FDA approval of remdesivir for treatment of COVID-19 pneumonia. The other two papers relate to thinking about how COVID-19 affects our practices, both in the cath lab and among the population and healthcare workers. So obviously, the cath lab considerations are multiple. Because of the infectious nature of this virus, it's been felt that we should be avoiding elective procedures on patients, particularly those who have significant comorbidities, where if they did get the infection, they would be very much at risk. So, for example, patients undergoing PCI for stable ischemic heart disease or endovascular therapies for iliofemoral disease with claudication or patent foramen ovale closure, these are examples of elective operations that could be deferred. Beyond that, we should be definitely doing case-by-case consideration. Clearly, the issue of STEMI is a big one. The balance of staff exposure and patient benefit has to be weighed carefully. You remember recently there was a small series published in the New England Journal of STEMI suggesting that as many as half or more of patients with COVID-19 and STEMI did not have a clear culprit occlusive lesion in their coronaries. So although primary PCI is still preferred, we have to think about the potential use of fibrinolysis as a possibility. And in patients who have COVID-19, the staff need to wear all the protective equipment, gown, gloves, goggles, or shields, and an N95 mask. Patients with non-STEMI, particularly those who are felt to have a type 2 MI, not a primary acute coronary plaque rupture, one should strongly consider deferral of invasive management in these patients because of the issue of both exposure to the staff as well as the implications for the cath lab and cleaning. If patients are borderline in terms of their respiratory status, we should strongly consider intubation before they get to the cath lab, given all of the concerns about viral spread in the immediate area of intubation. Clearly, the vast majority of cath labs have either normal or positive ventilation systems. They're really not designed for infection isolation. So given the need for terminal cleaning following procedures on patients with suspected or known COVID-19, those types of cases should probably be done at the end of the workday if possible. And probably COVID-19 patients who are positive should be done in a dedicated laboratory to try to reduce the number of rooms that potentially would have viral exposure and spread. So these are useful things to think about in terms of how we manage our cath labs in the COVID-19 pandemic. The last article is a really nice review in JACC this week looking at cardiovascular considerations for patients, healthcare workers, and health systems. And there were a number of things I thought that were useful here. It reviews for us, of course, that the clinical presentation of COVID-19 is variable and obviously depends a lot on who you test. But mild disease is present in at least 80%, severe disease perhaps as many as 15%, and critical disease around 5%. And fever, cough, dyspnea, myalgias, fatigue, diarrhea are all legion, loss of sense and smell. And severe patients, of course, have pneumonia and or ARDS and may have distributive or cardiogenic shock. One of the questions that has come up is why do age, diabetes, dyslipidemia, hypertension increase the risk of getting severely ill from COVID-19? It probably has to do with immune function, that these are markers of immunologic aging and or dysregulation that affect prognosis when we get COVID-19. And especially patients awaiting or who've undergone cardiac transplantation are a very vulnerable group. We've talked before on this podcast about myocardial injury. Elevated troponins are common in critically ill patients and seem to be associated with prognosis. And both ECG and echocardiographic abnormalities are also fairly common, although flaming myocarditis with myocardiogenic shock is probably relatively rare. Cardiac arrhythmias are also common, especially in patients who are older. And typically we see atrial fibrillation and so on in patients with respiratory disorders later in life. Some of the antivirals that are at the forefront of treatment include ribavirin. We've talked about remdesivir. This is a drug that has an active site on the RNA-dependent RNA polymerase on the virus. There's a drug called lopinavir-ritonavir, which inhibits RNA virus replication. All of these, of course, are under active study. Certainly, generally, these drugs are somewhat investigational. Remdesivir was previously investigated in the Ebola epidemic. Hypotension's been reported, but extensive CV toxicities have not yet been evaluated with remdesivir. And we've all been thinking and hearing about chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. These can cause both immediate and delayed myocardial toxicity, and the toxicity of chloroquine can be a dilated cardiomyopathy or conduction abnormalities. And we have to worry about prolongation of QT and torsade de pointe in use of these drugs. And as you know, most recent evidence raises concerns whether they work, and they certainly appear to have side effects. Clearly, the consideration for healthcare workers is all about protection, isn't it? And a face mask, eye protection, gown, gloves are all important. Aerosol-generating procedures like TEE, endotracheal intubation, CPR, these all require additional personal protective equipment. And of course, even exercise testing, where we see an increased risk of respiration and potential viral shedding, sometimes one might consider whether instead of offering that, we do medical stress testing with dobutamine echo, for example, or rogadenocine nuclear perfusion scanning, for example. Clearly, the COVID-19 pandemic has changed the way we practice and the way we think about managing cardiovascular conditions in our practices and hospitals. I thought these three articles were of interest this week and had a few points that might be useful to you. The ACC.org has a wonderful COVID-19 hub. It's beautifully organized and very clear. We have all kinds of material there for you and your practices, from webinars to considerations of billing, et cetera, et cetera. So I recommend you go to the website and check out the COVID-19 hub. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View this week. I look forward to bringing you important information next week, and I hope you have a safe and healthy week. Thank you very much.